What is going on, everybody? John Middlecoff, Three and Out Podcast. Woo! Officially in August. Football officially back. All the veterans have checked in. And we're off and rolling. I'm a happy camper. I got Tiger Woods in the Bay Area. We got a golf major. We got football starting. Baseball holding on by a thread. Basketball's rolling. Sports are back. You know, your sports are back. You know, there was, it kind of went viral on Twitter. Kyle Brandt of the NFL Network tweeted that many, you know, sports reporters that didn't want sports to come back because they were rooting for Corona. And of course, all the sports reporters got offended by it. Like, listen, it is a complicated subject. I'm just glad they're back. I don't have a medical degree. I'm just rooting for sports. I'm rooting for those of you that listen to be able to go to work and have a business. And I also want everyone to be safe. But I'd be lying if I'm pro sports. I was rooting for sports to come back, and I'm glad they're back. I'll dive into what the major difference, though, in is baseball's had some issues. And really, I mean, the Miami Marlins are a joke franchise. Derek Jeter gave, like, some explanation why. I mean, he didn't take any blame. He's like, bro, you're the CEO. Their team was going out, strip clubs or something, and had a bunch of infections. And obviously then they played despite not knowing some of the results. So a lot of the problems were created by the Marlins. And I know St. Louis had some too. There also been some rumors that they went out and about. Like, you got to follow some protocols here, fellas. So, I mean, part of getting through this is doing the right thing and being mature. I watched Aaron Rodgers today, his press conference, and he just talked about, it's like, we've been talking about this from day one, about how serious you have to be off the field. It's why I've been talking, I've done several segments on just the importance of veteran leadership and just hammering it home. But at the end of the day, what's the famous saying? You can lead a horse to water. Eventually, the horse got to drink. Like, you can tell a 25-year-old so many times, you know, you got to be careful for these 3 or 4 months to get through the football season. Eventually, they're just going to have to do it. Like, your veteran guys can't hold their hands. So we'll dive into that. Something I saw Mike Mayock said to Albert Breer about the difficulties this year for rookies. George Kittle's contract is something I've talked a lot about on my other podcast, Haberman Middlecoff. And I saw something that Albert Breer wrote that I thought was kind of interesting, and I'll dive into that, and then just some other NFL stories. A lot happened. I mean, Doug Peterson got Corona. The Rock bought the XFL. We'll dive into it all. And then, of course, Middlecoff Mailbag, at John Middlecoff, is the Instagram. Fire into the DMs, and I will answer your questions here. Also, if you go to 3 and Out on Apple, subscribe to the podcast, separate from Colin's feed, and leave a review. I would greatly appreciate it. Tip my hat to you. But let's start with this. Every industry is completely different, even if they do something similar. And I think when everyone sees sports coming back, people think it's all the same. And I often think, like, the NBA and football have nothing in common. In the NBA, the players have all the juice. In football, the ownership and front offices have all the juice. In the NBA, they have 12 players. In football, with your practice squad, you have like 60 plus. And you also have, you have as many coaches. Hell, some staffs have more coaches than the NBA does players. So when they did the bubble, it was much easier to do a bubble, and the bubble was not possible for football. And then there's baseball. And a lot of people go, well, basketball did the bubble. Baseball's not doing the bubble, so baseball and football are the same. I would say that football even has less in common with baseball. In football, they, and I know teams have been saying this, they have like 32 of their own bubbles. First off, football hangs their hat on a military-like approach. When I say jump as a coach, you say how high. Like I said, with basketball, it's the opposite. LeBron says, no, you're fired. James Harden says, you're fired. And then the coach gets fired. In football, the coach says, you better do this or you're fired. And one thing we've seen with baseball is a lot of these players on the slappy organizations. Now, the Cardinals aren't, but it doesn't mean some of their players didn't act like idiots and break these rules. That in football, a lot is going to be on these players. And these coaches have talked about it all the time because the bubble only truly exists when they come to the facility. Following the rules, they've put all these protocols in place. It's going to be a very safe environment. It's going to be a much safer environment than your home. Because even if you're an older veteran guy, well, if you're married, have kids, or have a girlfriend, what you don't know exactly what she's doing every day. Maybe you have your brother come visit, your mom come visit, what they've been doing. There are a lot of variables. I will be the first to acknowledge that. But in football, if I find out, and I know they've released some strict policies about if you get caught at a nightclub, if you get caught at a bar, like things you're not allowed to do. But here's what I know. In football, there are only a handful of players on scholarship. In basketball and baseball, the majority of their players are on scholarship because there's guaranteed contracts. In football, you have your quarterback, a couple of your star players, and then your recent draft picks. And when I say recent draft picks, your last couple years of first and second round picks. But if I see a fourth rounder who's a backup solid player, let's say he's a special teamer, he's a rotational linebacker, and he puts my team in a compromising situation, do you know what will immediately happen to that player? He will be cut. In the real world, we would call that fired. Like most of us, and this is one reason I think football, I mean, its popularity a lot benefits. We've talked about it over and over, gambling, the urgency of every game. Like, it sets up with society. Perfect for television. But I do think a lot of humans can relate to, you know what? In most of your workplaces, you have to listen to your boss. Now, most of your workplaces, your bosses aren't necessarily yelling at you, but they can be stern with you. They can tell you what to do. In baseball and basketball, that doesn't happen, especially to the star players. In football, Richard Sherman, J.J. Watt, Tom Brady, they get coached hard, and they take it, you know? And definitely the people that are not as important, some seventh-round backup, if he screws up, he gets cut and sent packing and put his, you know, all of his stuff into a plastic bag and told to leave the facility. I know. I used to drop these guys off at the airport my first year working in Philadelphia. It might be a little different this year with Corona, but the difference in baseball and football for the fall on this most basic level, if you do screw around and you are not a first or second round pick or not some star player, you will get cut. I promise you, you will see several young players who are probably drafted fourth round on this season that get caught doing something stupid and are immediately released. Whether that's right or wrong, and that guy might go on to have a good career, but I promise you it's going to happen. Another thing, baseball, even in this shortened season, and obviously they've limited it to the West, the Central, and the East, right? You are still traveling. 30 of your games are on the road. So you are getting on planes, you are getting on buses, you are staying at hotels for several games because you have, you know, 3- and 4-game series. I was watching the Yankees play the Red Sox. Well, the Red Sox had to stay somewhere in New York for several days. The nature of the sport. It's where basketball went all in on the bubble because they couldn't have everyone traveling. Where football, now that there's no preseason games, we know for sure every team is traveling 8 nights total. And the difference of traveling in football relative to baseball and definitely a normal basketball season is you take off, unless you're playing on the East Coast, then you have to go 2 days early, like you would leave on Friday for a Sunday game. But if I'm the Niners and I'm playing Seattle, or if I'm the New York Giants and I'm playing the Redskins, or we can do it a million different times, the Bengals playing the Steelers, I leave after lunch on Saturday, and I get there at 3 or 4 in the afternoon, and I go right to dinner, I go to meetings, I go to bed, I get up, and I play the game. The travel for football is very unique, unlike other sports. And then after the game, unlike baseball, where you stay, you could go out, you could do whatever you want, even though you're not supposed to. These are still, you know, multimillionaires that can do whatever the hell they want. You get back on the plane and you go home. Now, I think the biggest question mark for football to just maintain their kind of individual bubbles is the guys and what they do at home. And whether it's an older player and their family being cautious and smart, and younger players palling up with younger players and screwing around at night. But I think the number one thing, and I watched some of Kyle Shanahan's press conference, he said, we talked over and over, and Aaron Rodgers said the same thing. We have talked over and over since the spring Zoom meetings. Everywhere you go in the buildings, you see, you know, laminated sheets saying, do not screw around when you leave the building. Like, it is going to get hammered into yourself, you know, nonstop. I've talked about it over and over. I bet every single coach is talking about it nonstop. So if these guys break the rules, that you're going to see guys get released. Because it's one of those, this isn't coming out of nowhere. We've just had this coming for a while. The situation, like, this isn't early April. We're in, you know, early August. It's kind of crazy. I remember in like May, I was like, you know, the summer, the heat's going to make this thing. It obviously hasn't. And it's really, you know, in my state, it's gotten more strict. But regardless, wherever you fall, we just don't know. I think it's fair to say it's going to be like this the rest of the year. So, like I said, football operates like a military. When the coach tells you to do something, you usually listen. Because it is the one sport where you can be cut or fired at any moment. There are very few guys in a locker room on scholarship. There really are. I really think if you dove into every team's roster, probably like under 15. I mean, seriously. Like, if you screwed around, you will get cut. Especially this season, which I think you will also have owners be okay with saying, yeah, get that guy out of here. Because there is so much money on the line for the owners, for the league, for the future of the league. Like, especially if I'm an older player, I am telling the younger players every day, do you understand that the salary cap, which has gone up like 10 to 15 to $20 million every year for the last decade, might go back $20 million if we only play half a season, if we screw this up? It still might go down regardless of what happens, but at least if we can make it through the season, we can salvage, you know, 100% of the possible money that we can. And that money is for you guys in 3 or 4 years. If you're a third or fifth rounder this year, you guys are the guys that are going to benefit or not benefit from screwing around in 2022 and 2023 when everything's back to normal and there would be normal money there to be thrown around. So I think the challenge is going to be there. I've said it from the jump. It's on the younger players to listen, but I do think football has a lot going for it. Limited travel, the military style of the coaches having power, the GMs having power, and that is not the case in the other sports. The players have all the juice, and when you give them all the juice, that they don't have to listen all the time. Whether that's even in a pandemic, we're seeing it in baseball. They don't listen. That's why some of these teams are falling apart. You notice like the Dodgers aren't having any issues, the Yankees haven't any problems. It's pretty easy to see the mature teams, right? It just is. And it's easy to see the organizations, the guys aren't taking it as seriously. And in football, I just think that the setup of the operation is going to really benefit and give a sport that, in theory, shouldn't have a great chance, you know, relative to the way it's played, how hard it is to social distance, but probably have a pretty good opportunity to be successful. Now, typically, I tried to find the stat. I couldn't. I think it changes year to year. On a given year, I think it's like 2.5 undrafted free agents make every team in the league. And obviously some teams have 5 guys make it. You know, you'd have like, you know, your really good teams like the Saints or the Niners or the Baltimore Ravens might not have 1 on a given year, right? It's every team's different. It's easier to make the Bengals as an undrafted free agent than it is going to be to make the Green Bay Packers. Now, depending on what position you play, it obviously changes. And definitely the same speaks for a 6th or 7th round pick. Now, they have a little more invested in you as a 6th or 7th round pick. But at the end of the day, if I gave an undrafted free agent $20,000 and I gave a 6th round pick $40,000, if my undrafted free agent is much better than my 6th round pick, I don't really give a shit. I'll keep the undrafted free agent. But a huge way to determine which one of those two guys is better is usually through padded practice, is usually through the preseason games. As we know, no preseason games. I saw Aaron Rodgers say today, we're probably only going to have 14 padded practices. And in those padded practices, a lot is going to be put on veteran players on every team. So you're going to see, Mike Mayock said, this is probably the hardest year for the rookie in the history of the NFL. They're at an extreme disadvantage. And I do think that speaks for both segments. The first and second and third round rookies, definitely the first and second round rookies, are viewed as starters. So when I take a guy in the first or second round, I expect that guy at minimum to be rotating and my first round guy to be a starting player, right? But there's a chance with only 14 padded practices, he's not ready to be a starting player. And he can't beat out all the incumbent guys, regardless of the position, probably unless he's a quarterback and you want to force him to start. But if he's a wide receiver, if he's a corner, if he's a linebacker, and he just doesn't know the offense or defense, he's going to be in some trouble. But unlike the later round picks, he's in no trouble of losing his job. He will keep his job. But a lot of the 5th, 6th, 7th, and undrafted free agents are going to lose their jobs, are going to be on practice squads. Some of them are going to be out of work. And in 2008 and 2009, when the financial housing crisis hit, it didn't impact me. Because even though I graduated college in 08, I became a graduate assistant. I didn't even have a normal job. I just worked for the Fresno State football program. And all my friends were really struggling to get jobs. At Fresno State, we were cutting stuff. I couldn't even quite grasp what was going on. But talking to other people, they would be like, this is insane. I just lost my job. I mean, people with offers to get jobs of coming out of college, $70,000, $80,000, $90,000, whatever, all over. And this impacted people all over the country. Just like right now, I've heard, had several people email me. I've been on a couple calls with family friends that wanted me to, you know, help give some guidance. I mean, I don't really know what to say. People that had job offers that were about to graduate college, because of the coronavirus, the offers have been pulled. The job doesn't exist, and it really sucks. But here's what I would say to that guy, and here's what I'd say to the seventh round guy that thinks he's an NFL player. You will get through this. You will be able to sustain if you're talented enough. Eventually, you will get a job. It might be 2021. It's going to suck. It's not ideal. But a lot of things in life, we don't get to control. But there are going to be a lot of players, just like there are going to be a lot of employees that in 5 years are the best sales guy at their firm that couldn't get a job for a year. Just like there's going to be a six-round pick this year that may not even be on a practice squad. And then all of a sudden, in 3 years, the guy's like the best guard in the league, or he's like a starting corner for the best team in the league. It's going to happen. And I think it's going to happen at a pretty large number, unlike normally where that guy would have got a shot in OTAs, in training camp, definitely the preseason games, and he'd make the roster. And an older veteran would get cut. But that guy is not going to have the opportunity to show out. But I'll promise you, one trend you're going to see, that, and we're going to talk about this, you know, Three and Out podcast in 2023. How about Billy Thompson and James Williamson and all these guys that didn't even play football in 2020, weren't even on a practice squad, especially the undrafted free agents? Because it's one thing to take a draft pick, but the undrafted free agents might be shit out of luck. And these guys are going to come back with a vengeance, because next year, when there are, I don't know if there's actually going to be a preseason game, but there's going to be OTAs. There are going to be tryouts. There's going to be, you know, padded practices. It's going to be more normal, I think. Knock on wood. I mean, I don't know if I could do Corona another year. I might just head to the moon or something. But it's going to be a unique time in NFL history. It's a great time to be an NFL veteran. A guy that was, you know, before the coronavirus, when the season ended, a team going, we need to replace this guy. Teams might not be able to replace this guy. And may I talk with Breer about, and I could relate, one of the fights often between the front office and the coaching staff during August is future long-term success versus short-term ability. And usually the guys with the short-term ability is going to be a seventh-round guy who's been a, you know, starter off and on for 3 or 4 years that the coach likes, and he knows the offense or the defense, and he knows that he can plug them in, and he knows that he can play with them. And the front office usually wants to get rid of that guy for a cheaper guy with a much higher ceiling. But the guy with the higher ceiling this year has no opportunity to really prove it, because practices are going to be so geared toward around the people that are going to play, because now everything is just going to be toward week one. I saw it when I was at Fresno State. In college, the spring practice, we used to make a conscious effort, like the ones, twos, and threes got so many reps. But once training camp started, and maybe after a couple practices, you had to start getting your starters ready to go. And definitely at the Alabamas and the Ohio States, because you don't get preseason games in college football. So once you get to like week one, like the first week of training camp, as you're actually physically practicing, you kind of got to lock in. Now, you might rotate the twos a little bit if things are equal, but the guys with the threes, which are going to be a lot of late round picks and undrafted free agents, are going to be forgotten about, because that coach is just not going to have time. He is just not, because a lot of that time would have been in May, April, June, and even July, like late July and August. Like August periods where you are more balanced in training camp because you've had the whole season. And this year, you're kind of cramming 6 months into one. So I feel for those guys, but the one great part about the NFL, like in life, it's never where you start, and it's where you finish. And there's a long history of guys becoming Hall of Famers that were late rounders, that were undrafted free agents, definitely Pro Bowlers. This year's going to stink. And just like anyone listening that's in college right now trying to get a job, it sucks. But it's not your fault. You know, you didn't create the coronavirus. You didn't make all these companies stop business and lose their ass. It will end, though. So if you can just keep your head above water and keep swinging, like, you will get your shot, because we're going to be talking about these stories for years to come. Okay, let's get into George Kittle. And, I mean, I talk on my other podcast, Haberman Middlecoff. Subscribe to that podcast as well. It's more like a sports show. We used to have a radio show. Now we do a podcast. We obviously talk a lot about the 49ers, but we talk every sport. And we just screw around for, you know, a couple hours, 3 days a week. And we talk a lot, obviously, about George Kittle. We've had him on the show before. He's a unique character. And he's not just one of the faces of the NFL. He's clearly the face of the Niners. I'd say it's Kyle Shanahan and George Kittle. And he is, I mean, truly one of the most unique players I've ever seen in my, you know, 10-plus years of watching football professionally. His biggest problem, and I relate this to the housing market because my brother just sold a house. He bought a house near kind of in the Sacramento area like 3 years ago. And he's now moving, you know, must be nice, moving to a golf course. You know, he's younger than me, business is booming. And he had to sell his house. And obviously, it's not an ideal time to sell a house. But also, like, the housing market in California, for those of you, I know this is kind of a national show, got out of control. I mean, I bought my condo in 2016. It was going up like $100,000 a year before I bought it. And it clearly did not since I bought it. But, like, you just need to buy a home. He needed to buy a home. We had to buy. So it's just the smart thing to do. And you can't always time when you want to buy something or when you want to sell something. But he put his house, he bought it, I'll just use a relative, like $600,000. That's not the actual number, but I'm just putting that out to make it this for this exercise. And he put like $60,000 or $70,000 into it. Did a bunch of stuff inside. He put in a little putting green in the background. It was, or the backyard. It was sweet. Really nice, like, track homes. And when he tried to sell the home, he put it on the market for what he paid for it plus what he put into it. Just tried to break even. And he wasn't going to sniff. So he had to cut about $30,000 off the home to sell the house. Because the house isn't necessarily... His house was on the high end. He had done a bunch of stuff to it. It was really nice. The problem was, the other houses on the market were selling for a certain price. And everything in real estate is just about comps. Now, I would imagine, you know, the Hollywood Hills or super nice areas in New York or whatever city you live in, kind of unique, right? You could put a home on the market, and if you get a guy that really wants it, he might spend 2x, right? Most places, though, all based on what your neighborhood is selling for. I would say the majority of America is that way, non the super top couple percent little areas. And he found that out the hard way. And he kind of knew that going in, but he was like kind of shocked. And I think George Kittle is kind of getting screwed and might ultimately get screwed. Because in football, you are paid on comps. And your comp as a player is not just other players in the league. Because, like, if you saw the top 10 list of the NFL, it was like Russell Wilson, Patrick Mahomes, Stephon Gilmore, Michael Thomas, right? Aaron Donald, all these guys making stupid money. I mean, Mahomes, you know, $150 million, Russell Wilson, $120 million, Aaron Donald, $90 million, Michael Thomas got like $65 million. The highest paid tight end in league history when it comes to guaranteed dollars was Austin Hooper this year at $22 million. Now, I think everyone listening would go, Austin Hooper and George Kittle have nothing in common. There's not a coach in football history that would want Austin Hooper over George Kittle. George Kittle literally does everything that Austin Hooper does better. And he's a dominant blocker. He's a badass. I mean, he's an unstoppable force. But if you're the Niners, you just don't pay George Kittle just because, well, you're sweet like Michael Thomas or Julio Jones. Albert Breer wrote a really good kind of breakdown of the positions. The lowest paid position, non like kicker or punter, in the league is tight end. Obviously, quarterbacks make the most, the defensive ends, the corners, the wide receivers. You know, Joey Bosa now, on average, makes $27 million a year. The highest paid tight end, well, technically it's Hunter Henry because he's on the franchise tag, is like $10.9 million. Now, you would say, George Kittle, let's compare him to Julio Jones. with the 49ers, now obviously age factors in, the 49ers would not trade George Kittle straight up for Julio Jones. I don't think they'd do it either for Michael Thomas. Now, I'd push back, say the Saints wouldn't trade Michael Thomas for George Kittle either. But my point is, when you say those type players, George Kittle's in their conversation. But Michael Thomas and Julio Jones, their teams don't even blink to give him $65 million guaranteed. Now, Julio's earned it over a long period of time. Michael Thomas, star player, 3 years into the league, like George Kittle, it was pretty clear. You just pay the guy. The problem for George Kittle, it was easy for Michael Thomas to sign that contract. Just like it was easy for Joey Bosa to sign a contract for $102 million. Myles Garrett, while very, very talented, I'd call him kind of an underachiever. Unlike Khalil Mack and Aaron Donald when they got paid, those guys had been the defensive player of the year. They were clearly the most dominant player at their position. I feel like when I watch Myles Garrett sometimes, again, freak show around the corner, elite athletic attributes. And if you watch him on the right game, he can dominate. But I also watch him some games like, God, he's a little soft. Joey Bosa, I don't quite think that. But both those two guys, $100 million, $102 million, no big deal, guaranteed money. The Niners are like, why would we give a guy $55 million in guaranteed and more than double what the guy at his comp does? Why would someone give my brother $850,000 for his house? Even if he was like, hey, I'll leave you the furniture, I'll leave you my multiple 90-inch TVs, I did a bunch of stuff to the garage, I left you a putting green. They don't care. It's like, well, the house next to you sold for $10,000 less than this house. That's what I'll offer you, $10,000 more, right? That's where George Kittle's in a tough spot. And I understand where George Kittle, sometimes you see some of these demands, like Amari Cooper got $60 million. Well, if Amari Cooper got $60 million guaranteed, I would think it's safe to say they started their asking price around 80. Now, George Kittle, I'm sure, is asking for $60, $55 million in guaranteed. And the Niners are like, maybe they'd give him 30. But I don't think George Kittle's crazy for asking for that much money. I just don't know how you find a resolution. Because good teams and good organizations aren't into just shattering the market. Like when the Saints gave Michael Thomas basically a little more in Julio Jones money, it was still in the same ballpark. So when Amari Cooper gets less than Michael Thomas, they're all in the same ballpark. You give George Kittle, even though George Kittle has nothing in common with Austin Henry, Austin Hooper or Hunter Henry, who's been hurt multiple times. I like Hunter Henry. But you know what? You catch my grift. Those guys make nothing near the money he makes or it would be asking for. So I think it's a very, very complicated deal. I think what's crazy is we all agree the importance of tight ends, right? Some of the best players in the league over the last decade. Gronk for a period of time. Kelsey for a period of time. Ertz is a unique player, but he's a dominant pass catcher. And these guys just don't make that much money relative to their wide receiver brethren who make double, triple the amount of money they make. And people get caught up in years, you know, average per year. I think the Niners would gladly give George the equivalent of like, you know, 2 years, $36 million guaranteed. We'll give you $36 million guaranteed. Basically the first couple years, $18 million guaranteed. So you do 18, you know, I'll do the math right now. 18, let's do it times five. So 18 times 5. So here's the deal. We'll give you a 5-year deal, $90 million, average per year of $18 million, guaranteed 36. So it's basically a 2-year contract. And if I'm George Kittle, I say, kick rocks. But the Niners would sign that deal yesterday. And that's where I don't get caught up on the average per year. That's where Joey Bosa, when you say he makes $27 million a year, it does seem crazy. But he did get $102 million. And the day he signed the contract, he got $78 million signing bonus. Think about that. Joey Bosa got $78 million the moment he signed his contract. More than likely, you give a tight end contract of $25 million guaranteed, George Kittle's signing bonus is like $10 million. So you go, wait, Joey Bosa makes 7 times more than me? And I'm on a team that we just went to the Super Bowl and I'm your best player? And I don't have the solution. And I'm not here, like, I just get both sides. If I was George Kittle, I'm not signing an Austin Hooper deal. And if I'm the 49ers, I do struggle with giving them, you know, wide receiver money just because why? Just because that's what we should do. And then when you look at Corona and the salary cap's going down, it's a very, very complicated situation. I think the Niners will try to be aggressive, but they usually don't, you know, set record deals. They're not the Dallas Cowboys where they wait till the last minute and give out just stupid money. I wouldn't be shocked if this just goes the rest of the year without a contract. Okay, let's fly just through some stories that I've seen over the last, whenever the last time we talked. A pretty big story that hit Sunday afternoon Tim McManus, who covers the Eagles, who when I worked there was covering the Eagles. I think he worked for a radio station then. He just knows his shit. Reported yesterday, Doug Peterson tested positive for the coronavirus. I guess he had been tested multiple times. He's asymptomatic, but obviously when that happens, he can't be around the team. Deuce Staley is the acting interim head coach until, I don't know the rules, when you're asymptomatic, when he come back, if he passes a bunch of tests, I would imagine they are going to be very, very cautious about this, not letting him come back, you know, for a while. I know Juan Soto, the star young player for the Nationals, tested positive for corona. He was asymptomatic. Then he started testing negative, and he wanted to play, and they wouldn't let him. So, you know, tough time. Now, unlike a player with football coaches, it's not like Doug's touching anybody, but still, he's around the coaches. I would say at minimum, he's out a week, even if he keeps testing negative, and he's asymptomatic, and he never gets sick. But Deuce Daly, I tweeted this yesterday. I'm sure I've talked about him over the years. I think he's easily, in my time around the NFL and college football, and even just being around, you know, some of the Harbaugh teams and the Kyle Shanahan teams, is one of the best coaches I've ever seen. He's a position coach. He's a running back coach, but he plays a big role in their offense. Deuce Staley's just big time. Like, he is a big time NFL coach. And I think it shows you why they chose him to lead the group. I mean, I call Deuce Staley a friend, but I love the dude. He's a badass. I'll never forget when DeSean Jackson wanted a contract, and Coach Reed wasn't quite out of practice yet because it was really early, it was like pre-warm-ups, and the punter was punting, and it was like Macklin and DeSean catching punts. I mean, this is like, they're just screwing around. Like, practice hasn't even, like, 20 minutes away. And, like, Macklin is kind of watching DeSean. DeSean's acting weird. DeSean, like, takes a ball, punts it over the fence. Dude starts lighting into him. DeSean kind of runs off the field moping. And it was like, Deuce was, I think, like an intern at the time. And it was just, whoa. Deuce was not messing around. I mean, at the time, DeSean was easily one of our best players. He ended up getting, like, suspended a week later. But Deuce didn't even flinch. I love Deuce Daly. Complete stud. The Rock bought the XFL. I don't really have a take. I just think it's kind of cool. I mean, the XFL, I wouldn't say it was thriving, but it was not going to go under if the coronavirus doesn't happen. The XFL would have been fine. And Vince McMahon would have kept operating. Like, it is a functional business. And I think this year, with all these guys that aren't going to get a chance to play, we talked about earlier, these undrafted free agents, and these guys are going to be out of work, can utilize that next year if the coronavirus is done or we get a vaccine, hopefully, by, I don't pretend to be a doctor, end of the fall, early, you know, who knows? You read a million different things. But if they're able to do the XFL next year, a lot of these guys are going to be able to get a job. Cool, The Rock. I mean, he's a good face of your league, for sure. He's basically like this generation's Arnold Schwarzenegger. I'm a big Arnold Schwarzenegger guy. I'll be honest, I think the Arnold Schwarzenegger is a little cooler than The Rock. I'm not saying The Rock's fake, but he's got a little politician to him. I thought that Arnold was, and maybe Arnold does too. I was so young when Arnold was so big, so maybe I looked at it differently. But I'm a big Arnold guy. I mean, Arnold became a politician, so what am I even talking about? Maybe they're the same guy. One, you know, exactly. They're the same guy. AB suspended 8 games. Not shocking. My take has not changed. I wouldn't touch him with a 10-foot pole. I think he's an all-time great player. I think he's an all-time great talent. I wouldn't touch him. Maybe I talked about that last week. I don't think I did. But I see Seattle's all over him. I'm sure the Ravens are going to be interested. I'll be the first to acknowledge he is a elite player. And I tend to be more Al Davis than I do a stick in the mud when it comes to players. I have no problem like the Cowboys signing Alden Smith. I got no problem. But what I witnessed AB do over a 2-year period with the Raiders and then just with his tweets, to me it was like the guy was just unhinged. It'd be one thing if his life was in shambles, but he wasn't tweeting all the time. Like he'll go public with anything. I mean, John Gruden last year with the burned feet, he posted the thing on YouTube. It was just crazy. He's just crazy. Rick Spielman, Minnesota Vikings general manager, got a multi-year extension. I think he's one of the best general managers in football. Now, I don't love the whole Kirk Cousins situation in terms of the extension, but, you know, my buddies for the Bears, my buddies in the scouting world, they're obviously in his division, but just other guys in the league, I mean, they couldn't think any more highly of him. I think him and Zimmer are a really, really solid duo. You know, Zimmer, just it's kind of old school. They're just good at picking football players and good at running a football operation. I'm a big Rick Spielman guy. I'm a big Spielman family guy. Gardner Minshew, last week it was Matt Stafford going on the COVID list. And just because you go on the list, I know Lane Johnson tweeted out that he actually tested positive, but it could just be that you were in contact with someone that tested positive. Gardner Minshew, starting quarterback for the Jags. It doesn't actually matter that much right now because you're just doing walkthroughs. It's not like you're actually on the field practicing. But yeah, so Gardner Minshew on the COVID list. Sony Michel is on the PUP list. I love Sony at Georgia, but it feels like, you know, his career is trending in the wrong direction. I know he had foot surgery in May, but anytime you're in the PUP list, I think the start of your season, and just sometimes your season can be in jeopardy, especially when you're a guy that doesn't have a track record. It's one thing if, like, Richard Sherman or J.J. Watt or Fletcher Cox or just a guy that you know what you're going to get. I don't Sony Michel, like, out of the league in 2 years? Or does he resurrect his career and become a good player? I don't know. So we'll just have to keep an eye on what's going on. Okay, let's dive into some questions for the mailbag. At John Middlecoff is the handle. You slide right in, and we answer your questions here. As in we, me, because I got a phone in my hand. I got a baseball game on the TV. There's golf going on. I guess not going on, but the golf major. I got basketball games happening. We got a lot of sports, and we got football, baby. And we got football, and let's start with the questions. Also, remember, go to 3 and Out. And please subscribe to the pod as well as leave a little review. I greatly appreciate it. With the coronavirus affecting preseason practice time for players and coaches, does this disproportionately affect one side of the ball, offense or defense? When the season plays out, would you expect final scores of games to be higher or lower than average? Meaning, will offenses or defense have an advantage over others as a result of limited practice? Well, the rule of thumb is it usually affects the offense early in the season because timing is such a big deal. And I'd say this year, more than any, the no off-season activities, these guys, even some of them that worked out together, right, still a pretty limited amount of time. Now, I think it will disproportionately positively impact offenses that are returning. So, for example, Russell Wilson, Tyler Lockett, DK Metcalf. And those tight ends, like, he'll be in good shape. Mahomes, Kelsey, Tyreek Hill, Sammy Watkins, Hardeman, same page. Lamar, all his guys in that offense, same page. 49ers, Jimmy, Kittle, those guys, same page. I think any team with new quarterbacks, or the Saints, a good example. Saints will be okay. For example, Wentz and Philly, like, they got to incorporate those guys back into the mix, all the injured wide receivers. So that's kind of a lot of moving parts. The Patriots, I know Belichick's great, but like Cam Newton, Brady, you know, incorporating with new offensive weapons. Now, typically the defense is ahead, but here's where I'd push back a little bit. Typically the defense is ahead, and definitely like back in the day, like Parcells and Walsh, because you were doing double days and you were hitting and tackling. Well, I would imagine there's not a team in the NFL that's going to tackle in the fall. Like in the next fall, I mean, we're here in the next month, whenever they can put on pads in like 2 weeks. It's kind of crazy. They're not putting on pads till August 14th, I think is the date. Maybe the Chiefs and the Texans can go a couple days before that. But I would be shocked if there's anything to the ground tackling. So if you think about it, even if the offense is, like, just think about like half the offense in the league that have guys returning, right? All the good teams. The Packers, I know they got some new wide receivers, but just like Devontae and Aaron, Jimmy, Russell Wilson, Drew Brees and his crew, just those type teams. Imagine trying to tackle them in space when they know what they're doing. The tackling, the speed of the game, which it's hard to duplicate in practice, especially when you're not going to the ground. That's a great question. I guess in a roundabout way, I'm prepared to see everything. Offenses be timing be way off. Tackling be really shitty. Like, listen, I love sport of football. It obviously pays a lot of my bills. But there's a chance, and I'm not trying to be Debbie Downer, but the first couple weeks of the NFL season could look pretty bad. You know, it just could look off. And I don't think any of us should complain. It's pretty understandable, right? Two questions. What's your theory takes of yours that you have a lot of belief in that you would say most NFL people disagree with? Also, do you think Tiger can get in contention at the PGA Championship this week? Great call on Koepka in your lineups. I had no confidence in him, and he was playing, but glad to see he's hitting ready for a major. I love Koepka on that course in Memphis. I think the hardest part, ask your Tiger question first, is he's 44 years old and he's got a bad back. The weather in this course at Harding Park, like I'm 25 miles away from Harding Park. I live in the suburbs on the other side of the Bay Bridge. It's 95 degrees here. I'm playing golf tomorrow. I'm going to sweat my ass off. I mean, it's hot. At Harding Park, it's like 60 degrees, windy, and it's right by the ocean. It's cold. I think it's hard for guys with bad backs to play in the cold. Now, the course is short, so I think Tiger can, you know, he can just outthink people. He's like, you know, Peyton Manning. He's better than Peyton Manning that last year, but he's like an older Peyton Manning. He's just smarter than everybody else. But he doesn't quite have the game that he used to have, but he can outthink you. So when the courses get really hard, like the Masters, like hopefully this week, I think he can use strategy. He can just out-strategize them. Now, it's difficult. Some of these guys hit it like 50 yards past him. I don't know. It's going to be hard. The one thing in the NFL, I get pushback. I got some pushback on my take on Dak that the Cowboys didn't screw up for not signing him. I don't know. I think a lot like my fellow friends in the league. You know, we all kind of, I tend to be, I guess, pro-management because I'm kind of on their side on a lot of stuff. The Rock buys the XFL. Pac-12 agrees for some player demands, making them ineligible for the NCAA. Pac-12 joins the XFL. It's 2020. Who knows? That would be sweet. I'd be all for that. If you tell me right now the Pac-12 joins the XFL, I'm in it. Would you be shocked if Gronk is near the level of a tier one tight end, Kittle and Kelsey this year? His last year was bad, but now he's the healthiest he's been in nearly a decade. If he wasn't, it's hard for me to believe he's come back. It's not like he forgot how to play football, especially with Tom. He's still a physical freak, and the time off could actually help him move a little bit better. The only thing that could limit him is Tampa's use of him in efforts to keep him healthy for the entire year now that they have their sights on a Super Bowl along with two other good tight ends. I can't see a healthy Gronk being worse than his last year when he was an elite blocker. Yeah, to me, if Gronk is moving around, because remember that last year I think he struggled to move around, and he was just kind of beaten down, he could be a lot more spry. Now, typically, guys don't just leave pro sports in their early 30s after struggling with injuries and just come storming back. So, you know, Gronk's going to be a good player. He's one of the greatest players, probably. I mean, let's face it, he's one of the truly great non-quarterbacks in the history of the NFL. He was easily the best non-quarterback on his own team on several Super Bowl teams. He is an all-time first ballot Hall of Famer. So if he was unhealthy his last year, which he was, and he got healthy, I think it's fair to say he could be really good. Now, like you said, they got multiple tight ends, but to me, they got multiple wide receivers. So is Brady, now him and Brady are going to be on the same page, but what about Evans? What about Godwin? I mean, those guys, you could argue Evans and Godwin are arguably the best duo in the league. But I'm with you. I'd say Kittle's a better player right now than Kelsey just because he's a better blocker. But, you know, those guys are younger and they're just less injured. At least George is. I mean, even George kind of got beat up. It's hard to not get beat up at tight end. You know, it's one of those. Me and Guy on my other pod were talking about it. We always say, like, coaches love tight ends. Well, no shit. What if I went to you and didn't tell you the position? It's like, well, you got this guy. He blocks defensive ends. You know the guys they pay $100 million to. And they do that. And then in the run game, they can help in the passing game do that. In the run game, they can destroy those defensive ends if you get a good one, like a Gronk or a Kittle. And they can block all your linebackers. Also, in the passing game, they can dominate in the middle of the field because they're bigger than everyone. No one can cover them. And then the red zone, they can dominate with jump balls and score a bunch of touchdowns. It's like, yeah, no shit coaches like those guys. That's what's crazy about them not making any money. Like, Kittle, Kelsey, and Gronk should have been making wide receiver money. And say what you want about Jimmy Graham, and listen, Jimmy Graham toward the end wasn't that good because he got injured, but and he was never a great blocker, but he was worth wide receiver money. So when him and the Saints got into it, like, say what you want, like, he deserved top of the market cash. And wide receivers right now are just flying by those guys in terms of money. George from the UK here. Big Bears fan. Love the pod. Chicago took Trubisky in the 17 draft, passing on Mahomes and Watson. Hypothetical question. If Mahomes had gone to Chicago, do you think he'd have the same success? Bears fans say, oh, if we drafted Mahomes, we'd have been the Super Bowl champs. I'm not so sure. What are your thoughts? Well, he might not have played as a rookie. I would say by his second year, if they had fired John Fox and brought in Matt Nagy the year they went 12-4 with Trubisky with that defense, I don't know if Mahomes would have won the MVP for them, but how would they have not been dramatically better? And they went 8-8 last year with Trubisky, who couldn't have been any worse. Now, would he have been this all-time great player that he's turned in? Probably not. But I think with Nagy, who definitely liked him coming out, they would have been pretty successful. Because their defense, even last year, when they didn't make the playoffs, was still a top 5 or 6 defense in the league. Just relative to what it was the year before, it wasn't that good. But for a playoff team, like if they just would have had a good offense, the Bears would have been good. If you just put the Bears defense on like the Houston Texans, you're talking like Super Bowl contender. You know, you're talking about a team that just probably wins 13 games. So, yeah, I think he would have made a pretty big difference. I'm 28 and grew up a Pats fan, basically only remembering Brady and a small sample of Bledsoe as the quarterback, so safe to say the season is going to be interesting to say the least. With all the Cam talk, I think something that's being overlooked is how great this actually could be for Stidham this year. I feel like Stidham has caught some ricochet shots, saying if he was the guy, he'd be the starter this year and we wouldn't need Cam. Personally, I thought this could be the best thing to happen to him. The Pats clearly want to implement a new mobile quarterback system, and now Stidham has a year under his belt learning the Brady system and getting the timing down, but now he gets to learn the new mobile system while building on the skills of timing he learned last year without being thrown into the fire. Does this seem logical, or am I just spin-zoning myself into thinking that the Pats had no forethought into Brady leaving and Newton just fell into their laps? I think both things can be true. I think Cam Newton fell into their laps 100%. I mean, they got him for $550,000. And I think they really like Jarrett Stidham. And I think they like Jarrett Stidham because they thought if Brady ever left that they could change the offense a little bit for a more mobile quarterback. Now they have to because of Cam, and Cam, if he's healthy, he's going to be better than Stidham. And you're right. Anytime you get to be around Tom Brady for a year, it's going to benefit you, right? It's benefited every quarterback that's come around there that could play. Jacoby, obviously it's benefited Jimmy. It benefited Matt Castle. And I don't know that much about Jarrett Stidham, but how could you not learn being around the guy? Now, the way that the league has changed, you got to be more mobile to play. And they would never ask most quarterbacks to do what Tom did because those days are kind of over, just playing like that. So my take would be, yes, he can 100% benefit now from knowing multiple offenses, knows what it takes to eat you alive in the pocket, and then knowing how a mobile offense when a guy's are on the move works as well. Now, here's the like ultimately where serve him well, big picture, it's going to come down to, can the guy play? You know, can the guy complete passes? Can the guy see blitzes? Can the guy understand defenses? Can they put weapons around him, which they don't really have right now? So a lot of stuff's out of your control. But anytime you got Bill Belichick as your head coach, Josh McDaniels as your offensive coordinator, and the Patriots culture, like he's got a chance to be pretty good. So I would say you might be on to something there. Appreciate everyone hitting me up. Keep leaving DMs. At John Middlecoff. Also, keep subscribing to the podcast and enjoy the week. Enjoy football. Hopefully, we'll start getting some stories, but I mean, they're just doing walkthroughs, but it's back. And hopefully, just keep our fingers crossed. Knock on some wood. Knock on wood if you're with me, Gruden style. We can keep it back because I love football. So, I'll talk to you later this week. Peace.